Welcome to the Divorce Hour with Alyssa Panitz. We want to support and comfort anyone going through this painful journey and be the guiding light so many people are looking for.
As we've been discussing, May is Mental Health Awareness Month, and paying attention to your mental health is important, not just now, but always, especially when you're going through a stressful situation such as a divorce. Want to know what can also negatively impact your mental health? Realizing you forgot, overlooked, or simply just didn't know. One scenario I see being played out more often than it should is the importance of life insurance and why it is vital, especially in a divorce situation, to have. Joining us to explain why you can't afford to ignore this matter is Grace Roessler, a Massachusetts law firm, Myrick O'Connell. Grace concentrates on all aspects of family law, including the cases that have to be litigated, which means appearing before a judge, and that too can take a toll on your mental health. In addition to her courtroom skills, Grace also has experience serving as a third-party neutral and is a certified mediator. It is for this reason and many, many more, Grace was included in the 2023 edition of The Best Lawyers, Ones to Watch in America, for her work and her many, many accomplishments. Grace, welcome.
Thank you so much, Alyssa, for having me. I really, really am excited to talk about life insurance. This is one of my favorite topics in the divorce situation, and I am ready to get talking to you about how important it is in the context of divorce.
And I am so excited. You are, and nobody better to talk about it than you, because you are so savvy. And what's interesting is you call life insurance the backup plan. Why? What does life insurance have to do with a divorce?
Yeah, so life insurance has probably about two separate roles when it comes to divorce. The first is you have to remember that whole life insurance policies have cash values associated with them. So first and foremost, and kind of on the boring side of things, life insurance, whole life insurance, is an asset. So when you fill out any kind of financial statements or you're dividing assets, you have to remember to always look at what is the cash value of a whole life insurance that either party might have, right? And the second way that life insurance comes into play in a divorce is that, as you said before, it is a backup plan. Most people use life insurance policies as security, a way to secure the financial obligations of whoever has to pay either child support or alimony or college contributions.
You know, a divorce does not happen overnight, and in order to settle one, it happens in different stages. So at what point in the divorce action does the quote-unquote life insurance matter come into play?
You know, It comes into play both on the preparation side for divorce and on the back end, after divorce agreement has already been entered into. So, for example, when you talk about, you know, do you have life insurance, on the pre-divorce side, we're going back to the issue of, is it an asset? What are we disclosing in terms of assets? And also, are we going to use that life insurance, that existing life insurance, to secure financial obligations? And how are we going to write about that and put that obligation into a separation agreement? So that's on the front end. But on the back end, let's say you have an agreement now and a judge has approved that agreement. Now, if there's also a section of time where you have to make sure that those life insurance policies are in place, that they are to the correct beneficiary, that, you know, maybe someone had an obligation to get a new life insurance policy or get the first life insurance policy that they ever had in their life. We have to make sure on the back end of the divorce that people are following the terms of that agreement and getting the life insurance that is required by the terms of the agreement. So it really, it comes into play on both sides of that divorce timeline.
You know, life insurance needs to be current, valid, and as you say, there's a value that's agreed upon. But what people need to understand is in Massachusetts, where you are based, there are three financial obligations that these life insurance policies could satisfy. What are they?
So life insurance is generally seen as security for child support, alimony, and possibly college contribution. And let me break that down a little bit. So with respect to child support, and my caveat here is in Massachusetts, we have child support guidelines. Those child support guidelines are a calculation that you run. It includes usually the base salaries of both parties. It includes how many children are covered by the guidelines. It includes who's paying for health insurance for the family or individually. Those are all factors that get calculated out in a big calculator under our Massachusetts child support guidelines. The difference between Massachusetts and many states is that we actually have an obligation for child support past the age of 19. That's very different than a lot of other states. And from age 19 to 23, the child support guidelines can be applied. They also can be applied concurrent with an obligation to pay for college. So when I talk about child support in Massachusetts, just note that I am talking also about post age 19 support, okay? And so when we go back to the issue of child support, let's say that you have run the child support guidelines and you have three children, that child support order calculates to $500 a week, for example. That comes roughly to $26,000 a year. If you have a three-year-old child at the time that you get divorced, and we know that Massachusetts can potentially cover, you have an obligation for child support up to age 23. You're looking at almost 20 years of a child support order, right? And if you figure out, all right, $26,000 per year in child support multiplied by 20 years, that aggregate value over the course of those 20 years is roughly $520,000. So we would be looking to secure roughly $520,000. I probably would put into a separation agreement. The person would have to secure $500,000 death benefit with the recipient spouse of the child support as the beneficiary of that life insurance policy. The same could be said for alimony as well. If you have an alimony order for a certain dollar amount per week for a duration of time, you can calculate out how many years and how much money you essentially would have to pay someone to satisfy that alimony order. That total amount is going to be the amount that you secure for the purposes of an alimony obligation. Same thing for college, and this is where it gets a little interesting. In Massachusetts, again, because our child support guidelines run through age 23, there may be an instance where you say, look, we know college is worth, you know, X. You know, if you're going to private school, maybe it's $65,000 a year. 4 years worth of that, you're going to end up doing an aggregate value and figuring out how much money you would have paid towards college. And why do we do that? You know, we like to assume in all these situations that the payor spouse, the spouse B, let's say, would live through the entire duration of his or her obligation. But what if something happens to parent B? What happens if that parent dies? You know, and I've had cases where that's happened. And we need, as we said before, a backup plan. So this life insurance policy, this death benefit, that's your backup plan.
And one thing you were telling me a little bit off mic, and this is something you strongly advise your clients, is that in the divorce agreement, you want wording in there that allows the other spouse, and we'll refer to them as spouse A, should be allowed to check those policies to see that they are current, valid, paid in full. Why is that so important, and how often should people be calling those companies to make sure they are still intact?
Absolutely. Yes, they should absolutely be able to check. I usually put in that you check with your spouse B has to provide proof that the policy is in place. I also recommend that you send not only that the policy is in place, but the beneficiary designation is still spouse A, because we have a lot of cases where someone might get remarried and they put their new spouse on that old life insurance policy, which you don't want to have, because spouse A is still entitled to those life insurance proceeds. And I would absolutely say that you should be checking, because if they do not exist and your spouse B dies before the duration of their obligation, you don't have a backup plan, and you might be left with raising children on your own without the financial security that you would have had otherwise.
Last question, and I know we're running out of time. We have about 30 seconds, but if spouse A finds out spouse B has terminated the policies, are there repercussions?
Absolutely. And in Massachusetts, I would advise that you file a contempt right away. I think that is a willful violation of a clear and unequivocal order. You can face fines. You can face attorney's fees, possibly jail time. And I think it's very important, and I think judges absolutely understand the importance of having this backup plan, and they will hold spouse B to that.
Don't go anywhere. We will be right back after this break.
Myrick O'Connell is a full-service regional law firm with over 60 attorneys and offices in the Massachusetts area. Myrick O'Connell's attorneys combine uncompromising standards of service with practical and cost-effective approaches to problem-solving. They have the expertise to handle the most sophisticated and complex matters while never losing sight of their first priority, their clients. Myrick O'Connell's family law and divorce team provides attentive, dependable, and cutting-edge legal representation. Whether a simple, uncontested divorce, custody dispute, or complex property litigation, Myrick O'Connell will provide discreet representation with their experienced staff. Myrick O'Connell's client services also include mediation, arbitration, discovery master, and conciliation services. Contact Myrick O'Connell for all your business and personal legal needs. To learn more about Myrick O'Connell, visit www.myrickoconnell.com or call 508-791-8500. That's 508-791-8500, or visit MyrickOConnell.com. That's MyrickOConnell.com.
Our next guest, Anthony Diaz, is a regular here at the Divorce Hour and always conveys a common message. The collaborative process in mediation has so many benefits as opposed to litigation. And Anthony has yet another reason why arguing and fighting ain't good. Anthony says it can have a severe impact on your mental health, which could result in a negative outcome. Anthony is the founder of the Florida law firm that bears his name, and he is also known as the Peacemaker because of his wonderful demeanor and top-notch negotiating skills. Anthony is not only trained as a certified public accountant, arbitrator, parent coordinator, litigator, and mediator, but Anthony also concentrates a lot on the collaborative process. Anthony, welcome.
Great to be here, Alyssa, and great to talk to you about this very important topic.
Such an important topic. And as we've been saying all month, May is Mental Health Awareness Month. So my question to you is, how does mediation and the collaborative process help cases that involve mental health issues?
Sure. So, you know, it goes without saying, divorce is a very stressful time in anyone's life, and it causes a lot of anxiety, emotions, and that gets even more compounded for those that are suffering from a variety of mental health issues. So mediation and the collaborative process are both excellent out-of-court solutions I use extensively in my practice, and both of them can really address cases that have mental issues surrounding the parties with much more support than going to court. Working outside of the court process allows the attorneys and the parties themselves to create solutions that support mental health issues much more directly and effectively.
Yeah, and I would love for you to elaborate on what you just touched upon. I would love for you to list the ways that these out-of-court resolutions can really help one's mental health as opposed to somebody who has to go to court.
Sure. So the law is very limited in its ability to address mental health issues in divorce cases. In court, the judge is focused on the law. That's their job. Everybody wants to go to court, not everybody, but the ones who do. And when they get to court, that's what the judge is there for. And the court is not in a great position to think outside of the box for creative resolutions compared to mediation and the collaborative process. The collaborative process, most cases have a neutral facilitator, and that person usually has a background and experience in counseling and mental health issues. So this professional, while not acting as a counselor in the case itself, has really a strong presence in health that helps the rest of the collaborative team in supporting the parties in creating a solution that works for both of them. In my cases, I've seen the difference that having this support in mental health issues really helps to resolve cases that may not have had a positive outcome in court. So really, when you're looking at cases that have mental issues in it, using the court is very limited and probably not going to have a successful outcome.
You know, something you and I have discussed a few times here on the show, everybody wants to be heard in a divorce. And when a person feels that their voice is being ignored, it could stress them out and have a real impact on their negative health. In the collaborative or mediation process, does everyone have the opportunity to speak about what they want so everyone can find a solution that everyone can agree upon?
Yeah, no, that's really, really important. And it's one of the main differences between using the court to resolve your divorce and either mediation or the collaborative process. Again, divorce is a huge change in anyone's life. I've been through it, and I can tell you, you know, it's not a fun time. It's a loss. It's a loss of one's marriage. It's like a death, and there's grieving and other emotional reactions that are a part of that. So having an outlet for these feelings is important during the divorce, and resolving cases through either a mediation or the collaborative process allows the spouses to have a voice and to contribute to creating a solution that works for both of them. You know, there's time for both spouses to communicate how they're feeling and what's important to them to resolve their case. Having each spouse hear each other is very healing, and it helps pave the way for a peaceful outcome. Now, when you go to court, the parties are only able to communicate what they want through the structure that's created by the court. You know, there's a very specific process. Who can testify? How can you testify? What can you testify to? So this limitation really increases the stress and anxiety that's already there during divorce. And I'll tell you, Alyssa, because, you know, I do still have some cases that go to court. People feel very unfulfilled after using the court to resolve their divorce because they didn't feel heard. And that feeling could linger with them for a very long time and affect how they move on and even how successful their future relationships are.
Last question, because I know we're running out of time. We know from personal experience, the longer a divorce drags on, the more it can really weigh on a person's mental health. Why can the collaborative and mediation process keep matters flowing, which is a win-win for everybody when it comes to their mental health?
Sure. So certainly cases in court can take a long time, and this causes a lot of anxiety. You're waiting. You're not knowing when the case will get before a judge and even how it will be resolved. You know, it's kind of like flying in a plane and being in a holding pattern. And imagine what that feels like. Imagine if you didn't know when the plane was going to land. Well, that's how it feels when you're in court. There's a court calendar, controls your case, as well as all other court-related matters that take time to get to the end of the case. In mediation and collaborative process, the spouses create the pace of the process. Each spouse controls the outcome. And when children are involved, it really helps the parents when they're going through the collaborative process because their children aren't stressed. And if they're not stressed, the parents aren't stressed, and it's a much better outcome.
Anthony, for people who want to get in touch with you and continue the conversation to learn more, how do they do that?
They can reach me. My website is anthonydiazlaw.com. They can also email me at anthony@anthonydiazlaw.com.
Anthony, thank you so much for joining us. Don't go anywhere. We will be right back after this commercial break.
Anthony Diaz Esquire is a family law and collaborative divorce attorney and Florida certified family law mediator specializing in resolving disputes easily, effortlessly, and amicably. In his practice, conflict to resolution, Anthony is known as the peacemaker. Anthony is one of 25 individuals worldwide on the Leadership Academy with the International Academy of Divorce Professionals. He is passionate about helping others to resolve conflict with compassion and have relationships with passion and purpose. Anthony is also an international speaker whose mission and purpose is to help families in moving on from their divorce with dignity. Anthony uses his experience as a former CPA as well as his peacemaking and mediation skills to resolve his cases. Many times, this can be done without going to court, avoiding the stress and uncertainty of litigation, and allowing the judge to make the final decision. Contact Anthony Diaz at peacefuldivorcenow.com. That's peacefuldivorcenow.com. PeacefulDivorceNow.com.
Why am I playing this song? Because the sun will shine and you will have bright days ahead. Our next guest, who is a regular here on the Divorce Hour, is about to explain how and why you can make that happen. Dow Wyman is the founder of Wyman & Associates in Austin, Texas. The firm specializes in all aspects of family law, including custody, division of assets, child support, and domestic violence. In addition to her legal talents, Daryl is also the founder of Divorce Resort and author of the book, Your Post-Divorce Journey Back to Yourself, a positive guide and motivating guide to give yourself all the tools you need to build back better. Daryl, welcome.
Thanks, Alyssa. Thanks for having me.
Oh, thank you. And thank you for writing this book. I'm so excited for us to get into it. And what a perfect time to talk about it because May is Mental Health Awareness Month. And I would love for you to explain how your book, Your Post-Divorce Journey, can help a person heal from the trauma of a divorce, which can have a negative impact on somebody's mental health.
Well, so the way the book came about was I really just started kind of journaling my own post-divorce journey. So at the time that I got divorced back in 2011, I had been a divorce attorney for 17 years, and so I thought I knew everything there was to know about going through a divorce. I mean, my parents got divorced when I was a kid, and here I'd done 17 years worth of divorce work, and what I learned going through my divorce is that I didn't know anything about what my clients were actually going through, particularly once the divorce was over, because, you know, my clients, when the divorce is over, they go their own way, and I just never knew. And so I went through my own journey and tried to figure things out. And so that's how the book started, was me just kind of documenting and journaling about my own experience. And of course, you know, post-divorce, your friends change. You're not hanging out with the other couples so much anymore. I was more with the single moms, and I was kind of watching their journey and hearing their stories. And I started to see patterns that we would all kind of go through similar, with similar experiences, and how that 1 year mark very often is kind of a hitting bottom and picking yourself up and starting over again. So I go through in the book lots of different techniques on how to get yourself, you know, how to recover from it, redefine yourself, look at this as an opportunity to redefine your future, not to dwell on the past, not to beat yourself up over mistakes, but to learn from them, move on, and be better and stronger for the experience.
Yeah, and I love what you just said, because it is so true. Starting over can be really scary, really hard, and it could take a few months, maybe even a year or so, to find your footing and really gain your balance. However, at the same time, and something you just touched upon, starting over can be really good for your mental health. And you started to touch upon what some of them are. But can you list what those benefits are and how someone can start, I say, on the yellow brick road and find their way to their destination?
Well, so I try to explain to my clients, now that I have been through this, that they need to look at this as an opportunity for a new beginning. I mean, this isn't the future that you expected or wanted or planned for. I mean, you had a very different future in mind when you were married, and you thought that you'd be growing old, you know, with your spouse, and now everything has changed. But it is an opportunity for you to take charge of your own future. What do you want that to look like? And you now you don't have to look at compromises or sacrifices for what somebody else wants. This is all about you, and you can say, you know what, I was willing to put my love of art or my love of traveling, or I was ready to put all that on hold because my spouse didn't like that. But now you can. You can explore what's important to you. And so what happened for me is when I went to therapy, which I encourage everyone to do, my therapist said to me, well, what do you like to do for you? And I just stared at her and I said, I don't know what you mean, because my whole life revolved around either work or my kids. And I said, I don't know anything else. And she said, well, what did you do before you had kids? And I said, I don't remember. And she said, well, then we're going to find something, and you're going to pick an activity that is just for you. Something that doesn't touch on kids or work, and something that is just for you, that makes you happy, that gives you flow, that, you know, that you can get lost in. You can completely immerse yourself in this activity and get lost, and it stimulates all the positive chemicals in your brain and makes you happy and calm and relaxed and more productive and a better mom and just a happier person. And so what I picked was, I said, well, I like photography. And so I went and I bought a camera. And when my kids were with their dad for the weekend, I would go and take pictures of wildflowers or animals or just something where I could be outside in nature. And then I took some classes on photography. I took classes on photo editing, and I could get lost in that for hours and hours. But by the time my kids came back, I was a new person.
I love that. And that's such a big theme of your book, rediscovery and reinvention, which is great for one's mental health. Why is that also an important message for parents to teach their children? Again, because you see this in so many different ways.
Right. Well, I mean, it's really good for kids to have a happy, healthy, two happy, healthy parents if they can. But it's good for kids to see for my kids to see me taking care of myself. It teaches them to take care of themselves. And it's not selfish to take care of yourself. Everybody needs self-care, and it's okay. And it makes sure that kids don't think, even though kids do think the world revolves around them, because they're kids, that they may be very important and maybe top priority, but they're not the only priority. And it teaches them, as they get older, that they need to find things that make them happy, too. So, it's setting a great example. It's also giving my kids a healthy mom, a calm mom. They don't need to know about my stresses. They certainly didn't need to know about any, concerns I had about finances, or I'm going to be alone the rest of my life, and any of the negative talk that was going through my head. They didn't need to know about that. They needed a healthy mom who can set a good example, take good care of them. And so it was good for them as much as it was good for me. And, when you choose an activity, and my therapist pointed out, the activities are going to be different for everyone. I mean, I picked photography, but you can do gardening or cooking or exercise or meditation or, whatever works for you, just something that makes you happy.
Yeah. And when we know that when we're happy doing things such as meditation and exercise, it also helps lower our blood pressure, which then lowers our stress levels. So we can get through the divorce process a lot easier.
Yes, for sure.
Last question, because I know we're running out of time. What other messages do you want people to know about in your book, Your Post-Divorce Journey, that really can help them build back what they think they lost along the way during their divorce?
Well, for one thing, they need to make sure they have a good support system. There's people who don't want to be the Debbie Downer. They don't want to go cry to their friends or family. They need to have somebody, even if it's just one person, but to have somebody who is their support system. So when they are having a tough day, they have somebody to lean on, somebody that they can talk to, and then may even just be their therapist. So that is really important to have that, the support. It's important to recognize that you didn't fail, that this divorce is not a failure. It's an opportunity. And look at it that way. Craft your new life. Maybe you'll be in a smaller house. Maybe you'll have to move. But you can craft the life that makes you happy, that you have always wanted.
Dale, for people who want to continue this discussion and get in touch with you, how do they do that?
Well, they can go to my website, WeinmanFamilyLaw.com, Weinman, WEINMAN. WeinmanFamilyLaw.com is my website. There's plenty of information there. They can email me, call the office. I'm happy to discuss this with anyone.
And don't forget to pick up Your Post-Divorce Journey, Back to Yourself. It's on sale now. You can grab it through Amazon. Don't go anywhere. We will be right back after this commercial break.
Daryl G. Weinman is the founding partner of Weinman & Associates PC in Austin, Texas. Her nationally renowned full-service law firm provides its clients with unique solutions for transitioning on their new paths. From preparing prenuptial, postnuptial, and cohabitation agreements to divorces, child custodies, child support, parental relocations, and same-sex marriages, Daryl G. Weinman helps families see that divorce is not a failure. It's an opportunity to craft a better future for themselves and their children. Daryl's mission is to see someone who's been bullied grow self-esteem and become independent and successful in their own right. Daryl has seen divorce from all angles, as a child, second wife, stepmother, and a mom who's gone through a divorce. Daryl's The Divorce Resort process is different. Instead of spending months dealing with overwhelming paperwork, spending thousands on lawyer retainer fees, and going to court over and over again, your entire divorce will be settled in 72 hours. Contact Daryl Weinman at 512-472-4040, 512-472-4040.
What if a couple with minor children are going through a divorce and one of those parents is suffering from a mental health issue? According to Mental Health of America, approximately 20% of adults are experiencing a mental health illness, which is equivalent to nearly 50 million Americans. Now, If that mom or dad is seeking help for those challenges, should that be used against them in a court of law when determining custody and a parenting plan? Well, here to discuss and explain is our legal contributor and attorney, Rebecca Frino of the New Jersey law firm Mandelbaum Barrett. Rebecca focuses on all aspects of family law, which we're going to talk about today, such as divorce, alimony, child support, custody, domestic violence, and parenting plans. Rebecca, welcome.
Hi, Alyssa. Thank you for having me back.
Oh, always a pleasure and an honor to have you. So in New Jersey, where you are based, if a parent, we'll call them parent A, has been diagnosed with, we'll take, for example, anxiety and depression, can that have an impact on determining custody and visitation time with the children?
Can it? Yes. Does it automatically? No. So let's take a step back. First and foremost, 90% of the public believes that there is a mental health crisis in the United States. That's based on a study from the Kaiser Family Foundation that came out last fall. That same foundation, the Kaiser Family Foundation, also came out with a study a few months ago that said something like 32.3% of all adults report symptoms of anxiety and or depression as of February 2023. So think about this for a minute. That means that these issues are prevalent. Mental health issues are prevalent for a variety of reasons. We all do remember the height of the pandemic. It's not exactly treated people well over the last several years. So again, these issues are prevalent. And believe it or not, courts understand that. They acknowledge that. Just because somebody has a mental health issue does not mean that they are less of a parent or should be less of a parent or should even have less parenting time. At the end of the day, the benchmark for custody determinations in New Jersey remains the best interest of the child. So if somebody comes to me and says, I have anxiety and or depression, or the other party has anxiety and or depression, my first response, not to be cute, is, so what? So do so many other people. We shouldn't penalize people for having mental health issues. That's my first response. My second response is, well, do the issues that either you have or the other parent have affect their ability to parent? Because that is the real inquiry at the end of the day. So again, can these issues impact? Yes. But do they automatically? No.
Can parent B use parent A's mental illness challenges as a weapon during a divorce action and ask the court for parents A to have supervised visits when they're with the children?
Can they be weaponized? Yes. Should they? No. I'll sit here and say, first and foremost, that mental health should never be weaponized. This is not something that I think is appropriate for somebody to weaponize. Mental health is health. This is not a joke. It's not something people ask to grapple with. And again, as I said earlier, 90% of our public believes that there's a mental health crisis in the U.S. So again, this shouldn't be weaponized. But remember what I said a few minutes ago, when the inquiry is the best interest of the child standard for custody purposes here in New Jersey. So if somebody is alleging that the other parent has a mental health issue or challenge, whatever it may be, and they're claiming that that challenge necessitates supervised visits, a court here in New Jersey is first going to say, well, what's the issue? The next inquiry is, well, does this actually affect their ability to parent? Does it interfere with the child's best interests? If there is a concern that a child is unsafe or in any way affected by the parent's underlying issues, a court may grant supervised visits. But I want to be clear, supervised parenting time is not the norm, and it's not a good long-term solution. Courts certainly recognize that here, and it's not something that is doled out in each case. So nobody should be under the impression that they can walk into a courtroom and say, the other parent suffers from anxiety and or depression or whatever mental health challenge may be going on, they automatically need supervised visitation. Give it to me now. that's not appropriate. That's not an appropriate application. If you're going to go to the length of asking for supervised visitation, there has to be a very real reason why it's necessary and appropriate to protect that child. So again, short answer, can someone weaponize it? Yes. Should they? No. Nobody should walk into a courtroom and weaponize mental health issues.
If mental health issues are being discussed during a divorce action, will parents have to undergo a psychological evaluation?
Not necessarily. So this is actually a great question that, believe it or not, I am asked constantly. So remember how I said that mental health issues are prevalent? And courts, again, believe it or not, are very aware of that. You'd be shocked at how many times people will come to me or people in a case will say about my own client, they have anxiety or they are bipolar or they have this or they have that. I need an evaluation. And again, my first response is, so what if they have a mental health challenge? So what? Don't automatically penalize them or weaponize this issue. Again, that tactic is inappropriate. For somebody to undergo a psychological evaluation here in New Jersey, or to be ordered to undergo a psychological evaluation, there's really only two contexts that I ultimately see that arise and a court step in and say, okay, this makes sense. The first is there's some sort of behavior, and it has to be on the more extreme side, that suggests a parent is unwell. And I say that perhaps they're unable to care for themselves, perhaps there's been issues during their parenting time, their behavior is erratic or concerning to the point where it's clear that there is something going on and this person may need help. I have seen a court order a psychological evaluation in that context. The other context where we normally would see a psychological evaluation is actually part of an underlying custody evaluation. In New Jersey, if parties can agree on custody and there is a custody evaluation ordered, forensic psychologists ordinarily do that. As part of their work, they often require the parties to submit to psychological testing. So those are really the two circumstances where I see it most often. But again, and just so we're clear, if someone has anxiety, depression, or bipolar, and everything is under control, they're being attentive to their mental health issues and challenges, and we're talking about a functioning, loving parent, and there's no allegations of issues for the kids, that party shouldn't live in fear that they're going to ask to submit to a psychological evaluation. We need a reason. Again, we don't penalize people simply for having a mental health issue or challenge.
I want to go back to that word penalize. What if parent A is taking medication for their mental health issues? Could they be penalized? Could that come into play and it limits their time with the children?
Again, this depends entirely on, I'll call this, the facts and circumstances and the nature of the medication and underlying issue. Out of the gate, if someone says to me, well, this party's medicated for this, my first response is, so what? So are millions of Americans. Again, mental health should not be weaponized. That's not appropriate in this space. And by the way, if we challenged everyone who took medication for mental health issues, I would be appalled at what would happen to the docket in custody. We don't do that. You're allowed to take medication. You're allowed to go to therapy. People should not live in fear. And our law does not put those people in fear. We respect when you deal with your mental health challenges. You ought to take care of yourself. It makes you a better person. It will make you a better parent. If a person is taking medication, I'll call it in extreme quantities, as prescribed, or perhaps for severe reasons, and the medications have side effects, consequences that affect their ability to parent, a court may look at that differently. But again, the sheer taking of medication shouldn't subject someone on its own to scrutiny. Mm-hmm. The inquiry at the end of the day is always going to be the best interest of the child. If whatever's going on with parent A or parent B is affecting the best interest of the child, that's when a court will pay attention and want to do something about the circumstances. But otherwise, if you're taking care of your mental health, again, you're taking medication or seeing a therapist, I salute you. Hats off. You are doing the right thing.
Rebecca, as always, thank you for joining us. You know, one of the greatest takeaways from my years as a celebrity reporter was discovering how the Hollywood elite are relatable, just like you and me. Some of us may not have their wealth or their same circle of friends, but the stars that you see on the red carpet, the silver screen, the small screen, or in concert, tackle the same problems as everyone else, including Hollywood favorite and all-around lovable guy, Dwayne Johnson, also known as The Rock. Recently, Johnson opened up about his struggles with mental health. Even as an accomplished guy like The Rock, he too battled his fair share of his demons, some of which stemmed from his 2007 divorce from his first wife, who he was married to for 10 years. Dwayne shared how talking to somebody and being aware of his own mental pain made all the difference. To get into a better place, Dwayne learned how to gain the emotional tools that helped him push through his mental pain. And Dwayne, who's a pretty buff and super fit guy, said the courage to talk to someone is your greatest superpower. That's why if you are struggling with the pressures of life, such as a divorce or anything that is overpowering and limiting you from functioning to your full capacity, get help, ask for help, seek help, because it's all around you. And May is Mental Health Awareness Month. Everyone needs a shoulder to cry on, including Dwayne Johnson. That's our show for today. Thank you for joining us. Until next time.
Contact Rebecca Freno, counsel in the family practice of Mandelbaum Barrett PC of Roseland, New Jersey. Rebecca Freno devotes her practice exclusively to family law, and she has substantial experience in mediation, arbitration, and litigation of family law matters. Over a decade of experience within the field. Rebecca is part of the family practice with combined decades of experience in this area, and they have a well-known reputation of being zealous advocates who instill confidence in their clients and protect their interest. Rebecca Freno restores order to the chaos that can be caused by divorce and other tumultuous events for families. Mandelbaum Barrett PC has over 90 years of experience in providing their clients with the highest level of personal hands-on attention. Contact Rebecca Freno at 973-243-7978, 973-243-7978, or visit us at mblawfirm.com. That's mblawfirm.com.